Lafondra looking to get close side of Font. Lafondra away from David. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Elm Park Royals podcast, sponsored by Blue Collar Street Food, who next weekend, it's their last weekend open in their current summer format. So get yourself down there next weekend, because they are going for a little refurb, refit for their new winter opening happening on the 5th of October, I want to say. Start of October, they're going to have screens for the World Cup. They're going to have events going on there as well, free events. So get yourself down there next weekend before they do close for a week or 10 days. Joining me today to discuss a away win in the north of England, Matt Lansley.
For the first time ever. For the first time ever. How are you doing, guys?
Very well. I'm doing very well. Yeah, as you say, it's been a long time. We'll put this out there now so that people don't need to hear it eight times throughout the podcast. But Lansley and I have gone on a historic run of not winning, not seeing Reading win north of Birmingham since 2017. So it was a nice drive home yesterday after the win, and some beers in the car were consumed. So it was very, very fun. Dave, you weren't at Wigan yesterday, but you did get to watch us pick up 3 points. Enjoyable.
Very enjoyable. I got to tell you, you don't want to mention it eight times in the podcast, but I think I'm struggling to see whether I'm more excited at the 3 points or the fact that the two of you have witnessed a win north of Birmingham. I was waiting for it like everyone else on the edge of my seat.
Oh, goodness me, it was tension all round. Genuinely thought we might concede later on, but thankfully we didn't. 1-0 to Reading was the final score. Yesterday's game, Dave, after 3-0 defeat in midweek, you might have expected some changes, and we did come in with one change, with Loom dropping out of the starting lineup. The lineup itself, although there was only one change, the system was definitely different yesterday. With Hutchinson not really playing as a defender and more as a defensive midfielder in that central three. What did you make of that yesterday, and kind of walk us through the rest of the lineup and the system?
Yeah, it definitely was obvious from the word go that it was a very different situation. And at first, in the first, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes, it almost seemed like the players hadn't quite adjusted from what they had known. Looked a little bit scattered. You couldn't really say that positional discipline was there, shall we say. McIntyre would sometimes be almost joining Hutch in the midfield. It didn't seem to click early on, shall we say. And I think that was the story of the first half for Reading. I did see a number of people reacting online saying, you know, why have we changed a system that has often done us well? Because it did look that different when you looked up top. Ince was playing as that second striker, almost alongside Joao, and just didn't really seem to be getting too much of the ball compared to what we're used to. So he was then dropping deeper. So then again, you've got these two striker positions, but neither of them are really that high up the pitch. Yeah, it did look a little disjointed to begin with.
So one thing about the system yesterday and the formation is that the more I now think about it in my head, the less I actually think there was a system change and more of just a personnel change. Because we still played three centre-backs, even though one of them is Andy Yeardon, and one is McIntyre, and neither of them, I'm not necessarily sure that is the best position for Yeardon, certainly. And then we ended up with the two wing-backs. So it still felt like we were playing like a 3-2, whatever the formation numbers might be, it doesn't really matter. It was three centre-backs with two wing-backs, except for the fact that Sam Hutchinson was acting almost as like a screen mat in front of the defence, especially during the first 25 minutes or so, as Dave said, when there wasn't necessarily that fluidity between the lines.
It was almost pretty much an advanced centre-back, I think, you know, because he, like I say, he was pretty much sat, like, no more than almost 5 yards in front of the back line. It was almost... You could almost say an advanced centre-back, or maybe, you know, even four centre-backs. It was quite defensive. I think there was a clear point, I think, yesterday. I think we said it quite early on as well, Alex, at the game, that like that a clean sheet's almost pivotal today. You know, it was just imperative not to concede or just not to give up the chances. And I mean, it might have been taking it to an extreme with the amount of obviously defensive or defensive minded players on the pitch, but it was clear to kind of see that mindset going into the game.
I think you're right. It definitely looked to me like the game plan was we're just going to not try and give up chances. And given that Wigan's home form so far had been four games and I think it was three draws and a defeat, something like that. They hadn't won at home before yesterday, and obviously still haven't. It felt almost like the game plan was similar to that of against Millwall a few weeks ago, where we set our stall out to basically try and nick a goal, get a couple of big chances here and there, but really the main point and the focus was not to give up the big chances. And the first 20-25 minutes, Dave, as you say, was really void of action. I couldn't tell you anything that happened from the first 25 minutes because I don't think there was a shot from either side, really. The first chance actually didn't come until the 25th minute. And Jeff Hendrick finds himself in a really good position here, probably about 6-7 yards out, Dave, I think. And at the time, I was really quite frustrated with the miss on this, because I think he just has to do much better here. Having watched the replay, I'm not so sure. What do you reckon?
Yeah, same reaction in real time. It seemed like he was in a great position, not picked up, and he gets that on target. Good chance of scoring. Watching it back, same doubts have crept in that you've seen there. Maybe not as clear cut as we first thought, but I think the overall summing up I would say is at the very least it should trouble the keeper, and it really didn't. It went flying over. And are we a little bit more critical of Hendrick here because he's not quite clicked just yet, as compared to the other new signings we've brought in? Have we had a few instances from him where it's just not quite been the accuracy that, whether it's passing or shooting, that we would expect from him with his experience and his level? Maybe. But I do think that at the very least, the keeper's got to be making a save there. And sadly, not the case. Into proverbial Rose Ed.
Yeah, Rose Ed, it was a long way over by the time it landed. And I think Wigan, Matt, didn't really create very much of anything today in that first half. I think there was one header in the first half that they had, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, they had one header that just kind of drifted past the far post. It didn't have much conviction on or anything, the header. And I think they had one snapshot from about the edge of the box. It was just like, I mean, during the first half, I mean, we said it, or I think you mentioned it to me during the game, it was just like this had 0-0 written all over it, you know, from early in the game, because it was just nothing was happening. It wasn't really the biggest advert for maybe football that you could probably find out there.
Just going back to the header, Matt, it did feel almost as if Wigan hadn't necessarily done their homework in that regard, because the one header which did come, it was a cross from the left-hand side, a deep cross from the left-hand side aimed towards the back post at where Andy Yeardham is playing. And we all know that Andy Yeardham is an A, a centre-back, and B, he's not the biggest player on the field and isn't going to win that many headers, especially against somebody as tall and big as someone like Will Keane. But that was really the only time that Wigan tried to exploit that, and it felt like they just missed the trick there completely.
Well, again, at the time, it was like you could see it happening, because I think it was McGuinness as well who actually got the header in the end. But I mean, Yeardham had both Keane and McGuinness on him, both towering over him, and it was just like the way it happened in that first half. You would have thought they would have, like you said, exploited it more. I mean, you've got a clear height advantage there. If you can get a good cross into that back post area, you've almost got pretty much a free header with either one of those two, because they're both taller than Yeardham. You know, Yeardham's not the best in the air, but like say, maybe they didn't do their homework properly. probably more likely they just weren't expecting Yeardon to play right centre back. I think we were all a bit surprised anyway that he was playing there, because, you know, now we've got the players fit back at centre back. You know, there's no real necessity to play Yeardon at centre back. Saying that, we've probably kept the most clean sheets with Yeardon at centre back though as well. So
the question for both of you here, why is Yeardon playing centre back yesterday? What's the, like, what do you reckon the logic is? Is it because Ince wants to play Hoylett at right wing back? Is it because he wants to play Hutchinson and he doesn't trust Loom? Or is it just because Yeardon is playing well at centre back? What's the, like, what's the reasoning, Dave?
Probably a combination of all of the above. I think that Hoylett has offered us a lot this season, and his work that he's been filling in at left wing back. Now we've got Rahman to bring him across to the right. You've then got the reliable Yeardon in that centre back pairing, as opposed to, Hutch has been playing very well, but if he's got this idea perhaps of putting him in front of the centre backs and that's where they're going, then he's got to pull him out of there. Who else do you put in at the back? And Mbenge, maybe he can go there, but at the same time, he's just signed. It's a bit early. Loom looked a bit off the pace on Wednesday, which, you know, fair enough, he's coming back from injury. So give him the benefit of the doubt there. So I think it's probably a circumstantial decision. I definitely wouldn't have taken Hoylett out based on what he's done for us, even though out of position.
Is it one that you think we're going to keep once, let's say, Loom is back to full fitness after the international break? Do you reckon it's one that Paul Ince continues with Yeardon playing centre-back, even if it's every so often?
Yeah. I think it's his backup plan. I think we're seeing the backup plan in action. I think once you got Naby Sarr back fit in that central three.
Completely forgot Naby Sarr. Didn't even twig.
Well, we only got that one great game, right? Yeah. I think once he's back in there, we'll see McIntyre probably drop out and Hutchinson in with Holmes. And then you've got your more natural right wing back position for Yeardon. And then probably Loom sitting in front. But I think if in the future he wants Hutch in front like that, there'll be someone else that comes in such that Andy Adam doesn't have to drop back.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right about it being a backup plan currently. It's not sure it's the one which is going to be the one going forwards, but it did definitely work yesterday, because that first half from Wigan was just slow, very, very slow. And I mean, the opening of the second half, Matt, was also slow. The game really didn't kick into gear until probably 60 minutes in. And if I'm being honest, the goal was the thing that really ignited the game, because before that, there wasn't really many chances at all, I don't think.
I think McIntyre had a bit of a swing and a miss just before the free kick. I think to be honest, after half time, Reading came out the better of the two, because there was a period in the game. I think there was a bit of an injury for one of the Wigan players that kind of stalled it just before the free kick. But Reading came out, I'd say, the better of the two teams. They came out with a bit more pace, a bit more intensity, a bit more of like, right, we've survived for 45 minutes. Now let's try and, you know, build on this. It was almost like the Brian McDermott kind of, you know, mentality from yesteryear.
This McIntyre chance that you mentioned, I think it happens just before the goal, as you say, and it's a bad miss, isn't it?
There was a few bad misses yesterday, I think, and it was one of them.
it was one of those where not only was the miss kind of criminal, and, you know, if you watch it back and freeze frame it and everything else, there might be a boot that goes in from the defender to turn it over, but still, he should be putting that on target. But the most disappointing thing was it was the culmination of the first real drive forward that we were putting together in the game. Ince was just, he was brilliant yesterday, but he was really pushing us forward. We had got the ball out to the right, we had lost the ball and then got it back, and then that cross in was very good, and the fact that we didn't get anything out of it was really disappointing. And that's where the old doubts start creeping in. You're like, oh, is this what today's going to be like? Yeah,
I think, yeah, it was one of those where it was the probably the second chance, really, after the Hendrick one, which we had. And as you say, Dave, it was one of those where you think, if we can't take a chance like that, when are we going to take a chance? But, Matt, I'm going to use a little cliche, come off the hour, come off the man here, because Tom Ince steps up. And, I mean, I saw some comments online yesterday saying, let's not bother having a player of the season vote this season. It's only September, guys. Like, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. But he's putting himself in a very strong position here, Tom Ince, isn't he? Because this is a very good free kick, and it's, you know, another 3 points which has been claimed off of an action which he's produced.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're a month and a half, nearly 2 months into the season. I just think we're all running out of superlatives really for Tom Ince so far this season. You know, he's just seemingly doing everything and epitomising everything this Paul Ince team wants to be about. I mean, I think we've said that 30, 40 times already this season as well. But I mean, the free kick, I mean, we know he's kind of got free kick ability from his previous stints at, you know, especially at Derby, scored quite a few free kicks there for him, but not really seen it yet for Reading. But, you know, I think a lot of people worried when Swift went about having a set piece taker. I mean, you know, you've got one here in Tom Ince. I think he is helped somewhat by the fact that I think the wall just decides to be a proverbial wall rather than a footballing wall. They just they don't even jump, do they? It's the most feeble kind of attempt really for a wall. But I mean, yeah,
it really felt like that. They were not expecting the free kick to go there at all, and they were expecting it to go in the far corner, not the near corner.
And yet there's 3-4 of them lined up there. Where else did they think it was going to go? Like, you know, it doesn't really
done.
Yeah,
he's been done by his defence. Yeah, because he's lined them up there, and yet they haven't jumped. So he's gone to cover, and his positioning was a little off. He was okay, but it was a little off. He's expecting them to cover that near post. And as you say, they haven't at all.
It feels almost opportune, really, from Ince to shoot there. I mean, obviously, he doesn't know that the wall isn't going to jump. But as you say, Dave, I think his positioning is maybe a little suspect. It's not awful, but it's not perfect from the goalkeeper. But it can't take anything away, because the free kick itself is very good, and it's right in the corner of the goal. Right in the corner, you know what I mean, on the side of the goal. He really couldn't have placed it much better, Matt. And going 1-0 up from what was probably the least good chance that we'd actually had, considering the McIntyre chance, considering the Hendrick chance in the first half, it really screamed a lot of Millwall away, where we created chance after chance, and we didn't score any of them. And the one we did score was a set piece.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's one thing that I think this team has kind of got at the moment. It's that threat from set pieces, be it free kicks, be it corners. You know, we're a very big, very imposing team for corners, but then we've also got a player like Tom Ince. I think even Hoylett's taken a couple of free kicks as well, you know, who can then exploit these chances, because at the end of the day, these are your free chances really to, you know, that are gifted to you to try and score goals, and you've got to take advantage of them. You know, if you don't have a player like Tom Ince in this situation, you know, you're probably trying to cross it in and get a knockdown or something, but it's just nice to have that threat there. But I mean, kind of in the game as well, it was just a sigh of relief as well, because like you say, whenever you're missing chances like we were missing earlier in the game, I say chances, the two chances we had, you know, you do start to think, oh, is it going to be another one of these days? But, you know, they stood up when they needed to, and got the crucial goal and put us ahead. And we all know kind of what happens when we go ahead.
When Reading go ahead, they win. That's what happens this season. I mean, after an hour of pretty much no chances in this game, the next 10 minutes were just mad. It felt like there was so many chances in the next 10 minutes after the goal.
It seemed like the whole stadium woke up as well, because it had been very quiet up until that point.
The Wigan fans were absolutely silent. And this isn't me, you know, trying to trash the Wigan fans. It was just very, very quiet there. And then as soon as Reading scored, it woke up for some reason. But we almost, Dave, gifted a goal straight back to them. because less than, what, 5 minutes after we scored, Wigan had a really, well, I don't know if it was a good opportunity or whether it was just a fortunate opportunity. I mean, what do you reckon?
Yeah, you're good. No, my heart's still calming down from this moment, so I remember what you were talking about. The period immediately after the goal, to be fair to Wigan, they really responded. They upped the intensity. The fans woke up. The general intensity did start to worry me that maybe they were going to come back into it. And this chance, I forget how the ball gets to the lad, but he's kind of outside of to the left hand side, I think, of the box, and he puts this shot in, and it beats everybody, goes past Lumley, no mistake from Lumley, it just goes past him, and it comes off of the inside of the post and comes out, which it to all in, like, you watch that back. I swear, like, 9 times out of 10, the flight of the ball there, you're just waiting for it to ping into the goal off of the inside of the post. I don't know how it quite comes out, but I was very happy to see it happen.
I thought it was a cross, in all honesty. I'm really not sure if it was a shot or a cross or what it was. It was just a kind of a floated ball across the area.
I thought it was a cross and a header from Will Keane. I think we covered all bases there.
Well, somehow
it could have been a header there.
Somehow the ball went towards the Reading goal. No one really knows how, which isn't a great aspect for this podcast, but somehow the ball went towards Reading goal and it hit the post. I thought, from watching it and kind of watching the replay on the big screen at like half of an angle from underneath the Wigan stand, once the ball hits the post, Dave, you'll have to kind of, you know, fill the details in here for me. Does Lumley claw the ball out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he did. Very impressive.
And then McIntyre hooks it away. Yeah. So I'm sure of that part. The how the ball got to hitting the post, clearly I've blanked that out from PTSD or something. I was so concerned at the time that we finally get this breakthrough down the other end and then we throw it away, but not to be. You're right. Lumley does claw the ball away when it's coming back across the goal. And then from there, McIntyre is able to clear.
And Matt, like a minute, 2 minutes later, McIntyre is at the other end of the field, and really this should be 2-0. This should be game over, because McIntyre puts in a great cross from the left hand side, and it's a very fast break from Reading. And I think McIntyre and Ince are the players who are highest up the field here. I don't quite know how you get those two to be your highest players up the field together, but McIntyre and Ince find themselves up the field. McIntyre puts in a great cross. And Tom Ince has missed a header from, I don't want to call it 6 inches, but it's a close header, isn't it? Let's be honest. I'm not quite sure how he's managed to head this wide of the goal.
Yeah, well, he's headed it wide over. But I mean, I think first and foremost, it was great work from McIntyre, because it was actually, I think him and Rahman were pressing up on the left-hand side, and it was actually McIntyre. He was able to kind of bulldoze his way through the defender and won the ball really well, puts in the great cross to Ince. But I mean, I think they were joking about it after the game, weren't they, in the interviews. I think both Paul Ince and Tom Ince both said kind of, it was kind of, well, it's the easiest header he could probably have ever scored. He's not a prolific header of the ball, of course, but, you know, I think with what Ince said, I think summed it up. You know, even his daughter could have scored that header from that close. I mean, it's completely unmarked as well. It's unchallenged. It's probably as perfect a cross as you'll probably see. It's not got the pace on it that maybe the cross had from Wigan that, you know, came off the post. It didn't need it because it just dropped perfectly almost. I think it was between the centre back and the left back, and just incoming was Ince. And yeah, I mean, I just Reading really, really need to learn how, I don't know how they do it, because even they're squirming these week after week, but when you're 1-0 up, you need to learn how to kill the game off. Ince said it after the game as well, you know, because these chances just put the game to bed, and there's no worry then towards the end of the game. Maybe it's keeping the Reading players more on their toes towards the end, you don't know. But I mean, I'd much rather see us go 2-0 up there than stay 1-0 for the rest of the game. I don't know how much more of this my heart can take over the next 36 games, these 1-0s and missed chances from 2 yards and one-on-ones and that.
Don't worry, there's another missed chance here. We're going to discuss that one as well. So, missed chance, Yakimete comes on 78th minute.
Number four. Which one is this? This now?
I think this is number three. And this is another big chance, Dave. Yakimete has been on the field probably 60 seconds when he gets this chance. And this chance is very, very reminiscent of the Shane Long chance at Millwall.
It really is. And I think the fact he's been on for 60 seconds may be a contributing factor here. He's maybe not expecting that early to be involved, but pass comes to him. He springs the offside. He's definitely onside. And he's through one-on-one with the goalkeeper. And you're just thinking, ah, the return of Yakimete. Here we go. This is brilliant. Everything was set up for this to be a goal. He's central. He's one-on-one with the keeper.
He's in front of the away fans. All he's got to do is tuck it past the goalkeeper, right?
Just finish up the story, write the headline, and here we go. And he takes it on target, at least. But the keeper's come out very quickly, to be fair to him. He's done everything a keeper can do in this situation, gets a big right hand on it, and the chance is missed. But my main thought there, especially with the timing, 60 seconds after the substitution, Lucas Joao didn't get a chance like that all game. And he must have been sat there on the bench watching that unfold, thinking, if only that was me. And you feel confident he'd have tucked it away.
I think the weirdest thing, though, was that he decides to take it on his right foot. He's got nobody around him, Mate. And yet we know that, because he's even joked about this in the past, he never scores with his right foot. He's got the right foot of just... nothing. There's nothing connected to his right leg, seemingly, when he goes to shoot. Why on earth is he putting a one-on-one chance on his right foot? He doesn't even make it hard for the keeper. It wasn't even a right hand. It was like he just passes it just straight into his chest. It's the weirdest, most frustrating chance. And like say, Lucas Joao on the bench doesn't get a chance all game and sees that. I mean, God, he must be...
Just watch Matt try to demonstrate how he's moved it onto his right foot there for anybody. Well, obviously, no one can see it. But Matt's just tried to demonstrate it to us on camera that he does indeed move it to his right foot. I don't quite get this. It's a very typical Yakimete kind of moment, isn't it, Dave? He's great when he's instinctive, and then as soon as he has to think about something, it doesn't work.
Yeah, if he has too much time to think about what he's going to do, that's not his game. He doesn't really... tend to pan out, and we've seen that for a few seasons, and I love the man. This is not Yakimete hate here. He scored many an important goal for us, but if you look back over his catalogue of goals for Reading, generally speaking, it's snap reaction to something and bury it. When he's got time to pick his spot, decision making perhaps lets him down a little bit there, maybe gets in his head a little bit too much.
Maybe we're just a team that just isn't very good at one-on-ones, because I think Joao has missed a few one-on-ones in his time as well in yesterday's season. It's just like seemingly they need to do one-on-one practice, because these continually seem to be popping up, and yet I don't think we've scored a one-on-one yet this season. I think we've had like five or six now. It's not good.
It's not our forte, is it, one-on-ones yet? The clock kind of carried on ticking through, and I was getting more and more nervous, I have to say, as the game went on. And we got to 90 minutes, and the board went up with 8 minutes of additional time. I mean, I know Reading do waste time, but 8 minutes seemed a lot yesterday.
I think everyone in the crowd was bemused at the time, because like you say, every Reading fan knows that there's a lot of gamesmanship in this Reading team at the moment, but. I still don't know how they got.
Well, I'm guessing the referee must have added on at least a minute for Alex Ray kicking the ball away when it came to him and nutmegging.
That was majestic. Someone needs to find the clip of that and actually post that, because that was shithousery to the extreme. When your assistant manager is nutmegging with like a little chop, like the opposing player. I mean, the game should have just finished then. The ref should have just been like, "No, sorry, we can't." That Reading have won. Reading have won. That's a KO right there.
Does the referee add 30 seconds on if he has to book someone on who's not on the field? Like, how does that work? I don't know. But the game ticked into injury time, and Reading brought on their final substitution, Mbengue, I want to say is how you pronounce his name. Mbengue. I'm not entirely sure, but I'm going to say it's that. He came on and played at right wing back in place of Junior Hoylett for the last 8-9 minutes of the game. And he looked okay, actually. Won a couple of headers, got involved very, very quickly. However, Wigan did create one decent chance, Dave, in the 94th, 95th minute. And Charlie White had a header from about 7 or 8 yards.
Yes, another one of those where they were putting the pressure on. And again, the fact that all those missed chances, we've left it at 1-0. It kind of had 90 plus 3 equalising header written all over it. The situation unfolds exactly that way. And inexplicably, he heads it right over, which was a delight to see. I celebrated, and a bit weird in a room on my own. But, you know, it wasn't as good as Ince's header that he missed in terms of chance quality, but definitely you were thinking he was probably going to put that in.
It's another game, though, where we haven't really conceded a big chance. And I think it's a game, the reaction afterwards, especially from Wigan fans again, is one of those things where you hear Reading was one of the worst teams we've played this season, or the worst team we've played this season. And yet the opposition in these games, I mean, who said that so far? Wigan, Sunderland, Middlesbrough. In all of these games, we haven't really given up many big chances, if any big chances. And it's difficult to really see their point, if I'm honest. I don't necessarily think we're playing that well, but also when you're limiting the opposition to so few big chances, are you really playing that badly?
I think the biggest thing is, like, we're not looking like, you know, a free-flowing passing team. You know, we're not looking like, to be fair, when Sunderland played against us, or, you know, we're not looking like a Premier League passing outfit, a Man City or Liverpool, whoever you want to use the comparison. We're not looking like that. But I mean, like you say, every single game, we're not really giving up that many, or not every game, that obviously in the games that we're winning, we're not giving up that many chances. Like, and if you're not actually giving up chances to your opposition, then, you know, you're gonna, I mean, we've said it before, you know, if you're drawing every single game 0-0, you're gonna, or if you're keeping clean sheets, you're gonna keep enough or get enough points to stay up this season. To be honest, like, all this talk, I mean, Ince has said it before as well, all this talk of third place and everything, you know, we're not going to be up in third place come the end of the season, or I think all of us will be falling off our chairs, I think, if we are. You know, that's not the objective. The objective this season is still just to stay up, just purely circumstantial because of everything that's around it. You know, so is a team that's just looking to stay up going to actually be that good of a team? I think most Reading fans know that we're not the best of teams anyway. So saying that we're the worst team is just such a... Wigan fans were
the
particularly
ones that say
salty.
It, though. They were salty. The whole group mentioned have been salty, but the problem is these fans have decided when the fixtures came out that Reading were the worst team that were going to come to them. They hate Reading. Like, the amount of piss we boil as a club is like record levels. Like, we could have gone out there, we could have passed the ball around like a Man City. We could have, like, Tom Ince could have turned into Erling Haaland and kung fu kicked a goal, and we could have won 6-0, and they would have come away. But how have we lost 6-0 to that worst team we've seen? They've prejudged. They hate Ince. They hate Reading. It doesn't matter. Who cares? Boil the piss. Go for it.
Dave, I know, Matt, you said that Reading aren't going to be third at the end of the season, but I know Dave's already sat there and looked up flights for the playoffs. So
I've got it booked. I've got the best table at the Purple Turtle already locked down. Don't worry.
We do sit third now, as you say, Matt, and we're 10 games into the season now. We've won six, we've lost four, but we have won six. 18 points is a much better start than anyone would have predicted. We'll do a little bit more of an in-depth review at some point in the next week or so in a separate podcast as to how our start has been and things like that. But Dave, just give me kind of like a quick two-liner on your thoughts on our start. Who's impressed you most, and what do you make of it?
Yeah, I think, you know, far from the finished article, plenty still to be worried about. The fact that our choice is either narrow win or heavy defeat, and that's it. That's our two choices this season, is a very risky way to go. I've seen comparisons to the Stam season, and there's elements there that you can see where the comparison's coming from. But I think overall, anyone in the fan base that says they're not thrilled with how this has gone has to be lying. Like, maybe you don't want us to go about it this way. Maybe you don't love the choice of manager, or you don't love the choice of players, or whatever it may be. It's a team that works together more often than it doesn't. And, you know, if you're picking out a standout, it's got to be Tom Ince. I mean, it's the most obvious statement I'll make at all, but he's been the difference, and he's really stood out.
Matt, you can't pick Tom Ince. Dave's already taken him. Damn. Who's been your favourite player so far, outside of Ince?
I'd probably say Junior Hoylett, I think, which it's a bit of a left field one. I think his crossing leaves a bit to be desired. But again, I think he epitomises quite a lot of kind of what this team is about. And I think is getting a lot of respect at the moment within this Reading team. I think Hoylett, probably Fauna as well, I think is going to be up there just because of the way he had a quiet start to the season. After those first like three, four games, I think he's been so crucial in this team. The way he can pick the ball up, carry it forwards, got a good touch. I think if he can get a bit better passing as well, he could be one hell of a player. But it definitely, I think, would be between those two for me.
Yeah, I think I would go Fauna as my kind of like most impressive player so far. And I guess if I was picking a second outside of Tom Ince, and then if I was picking a second, I think I might go Tom Holmes. I've been very impressed in the games where we have ended up winning. He's been very, very impressive. In the games where we have ended up losing, I don't think he's been the reason or the worst performer. He's had a couple of bad games, but I think I can see exactly how his career looks like it's going to pan out. He's the same age that Alex Pearce was when we won the league, whatever it was, 10 years ago now, 11 years ago. It just screams to me that he's going to be a really kind of like solid championship player for the next 7, 8, 9 years, potentially. I don't see him being at a level where he's just going to drop away from this now. So, yeah, been very impressed with Tom Ince, Tom Holmes and Fauna, especially those three.
I think a word for Joe Lumley as well. It sounds funny because a lot of people will point to that Rotherham game, but aside from the Rotherham game, he hasn't done much wrong and he's done plenty right. And I think that given what our expectations were and some of what he brings, not just the shithousery, but also the he commands that defence. I mean, 5 clean sheets speaks for itself. 4? I can't count. 4 clean sheets, sorry.
I think the thing about Lumley is he's not being asked to do too much as well, which helps. And don't get me wrong, I don't think he's played badly. I think but everything he's being asked to do, he's doing well, but he's just not being asked to do very much. He's being asked to come out, claim balls from crosses, which he's done very well so far. He can pick a pass out. Yesterday was the first time I really noticed it, but he can pick a decent pass out. Obviously, the Lucas Schau goal against Stoke was another example of that. And even though he's not being asked to make too many saves, he is, you know, producing those saves when needed most of the time. And I can see why fans are taking to him, because he genuinely seems quite a likable guy. He seems to play up to the fans. He knows what they want to see. And yeah, considering the expectations when he signed, definitely overperforming against those, which is good to see. As I said, we'll come back with like a bit of more of an in-depth review of our first 10 games at some point during the week. Now we're on international break. We'll also have a little family fortunes style game show at some point during the international break. You might remember one from pre-season. We're going to bring it back. Matt Lansley is the reigning champion and we'll be taking on somebody, probably Paul, to see who knows the Reading fan base best. And we can't end this, Dave, without a mention of Andy Carroll, because he's back and he did play yesterday, even if it was only for 20 seconds.
Sealed the win. Yeah, came on to see it out. Yeah, he's back. He's wearing number 2. Get used to it. Yeah,
he can't be called AC9 anymore, but we're still going to call him AC2.
AC2 it is. I'm fine with AC2. We'll be back during the week. make sure to like, subscribe to Elm Park Royals on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, whatever your podcast subscription service is. Leave us a review, and we will talk to you all very, very soon. You are.